From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. We got a long offseason ahead of us, but in the meantime, the Big Ten. You know, we just jumped on this Big Ten bang bus bandwagon a couple of years. Ever since we've joined, David, the Big Ten just keeps winning national championships. Michigan, Ohio State, and now your Indiana Hoosiers, 16-0, first time since Yale did it in like the 1800s when they were playing non-universities and things like that. But we got to talk about all that.
As a lifelong Hoosier, I'm absolutely delighted.
Yes, you and Mark Cuban and John Cougar Mellencamp, or Cougar, I don't know what he changed it at one point. Yeah, we're live on YouTube. Love it. We are live in person in the studio. If you're watching on YouTube, we appreciate that. I can put up. You can see us. Look at us.
Hey!
In the same room. We haven't been in the same room at the same time.
In years.
For quite a while.
We haven't, in 2026, we have not been in the same room together.
Damn.
I know.
Well, we watched a game.
Yeah, that's true.
But not did a podcast together. Email us, bigtencast@gmail.com. You can call us, text us, 424-532-0678. Tweet us at B1G Podcasts. Apple, Spotify, leave us a rating. 5-star rating. Reviews are awesome. No Spotify comments. Do we have any reviews, David?
Not a goddamn one.
Okay, I got 2 Trader Joe's gift cards left.
Nobody wants them.
Do you want them?
All I'm seeing is that nobody wants them.
Review us. 5 stars.
All it takes is a 5-star review. Look, do I need to reiterate the rules? It's very simple. You can write the most vile, disgusting things to us. And as long as they are not picked up by the Apple filter, we will read them on air as long as you make it a 5-star rating. We don't care.
Mm.
Okay?
You guys don't like Trader Joe's? $34 at Trader Joe's. Come on.
$34.
You get a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
We got to go back to Jockey, maybe get some, you know,
that we got to get some underwear to give people.
That's the incentive people had. And
Jockey
stuff.
Gift cards.
Yeah. So we got a tight window today. So it's going to be under an hour because I have a live show for USC coming up afterwards. But we got to recap the game. Our picks were both bad. We both took the killer Cignetti -8.5 and they end up winning just by 6, but they won the game. That's what's important. Follow our bets along for the year. You might have done okay. Not really. David was 67-70 overall. I was 70-67. So a little bit better. But you could do better than us over at our friends at MyBookie. They've been doing it from the beginning. For years and years, they've been working with us. And hopefully you've worked with them throughout this college football season. We got the NFL playoffs. You got the Final Four in the NFL coming up if you want to make some bets there. I think New England's like a 2.5-point favorite, or five and a half point favorite, and then the Rams are a 2.5-point dog up in Seattle. Bet the over-unders, whatever you want over at MyBookie. They've worked with us. Hopefully you've made some money throughout the college football season, and you can keep doing that. NBA, NHL, whatever you want to bet on, you can do it over at MyBookie. And if you're new, you haven't tried it out, use the promo code POC, and you'll get what they call a bet back bonus token. What does that mean? Your first bet, up to 500 smackers, doesn't matter if you win or lose. You'll get that money back. You win, that's great. You won the bet. You lose, you get a redo. So that's the bet back bonus token using the promo code POC. So make sure you go check it out over at MyBookie, because you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
Beautiful. Gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
We got to play this drop.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
Yeah.
Indiana. 16-0, Indiana. Ran the table. Kurt Cignetti, absolute killer.
But who'd they play, Paul? Who'd they play?
Everybody. Everyone. And they beat them all. I mean, they beat what everyone would consider the most talented team in the country, I think, in Ohio State. They beat Miami, which I think was playing like one of the very best teams in the country at the end of the year. They beat Oregon twice. I mean, this was not a season of like, oh, they got lucky and all that kind of stuff. No, Indiana was truly the most dominant team in college football this year, and that is categorically insane. Like, I think, you know, people have been talking about, oh, this is the greatest story in college football history. And, you know, usually I'm like, you know, down to like, you know, make a fart noise at that sort of stuff. But it kind of is, or at least it's in that conversation. Like, our modern understanding of college football is really informed by what we do for a living, you know, the recruiting rankings from our sites. You know, that is, you know, the formula for having a good program and a good team is generally recruiting high school and having them develop into star players at the college level. And it's a great proxy for determining who's going to be an NFL player. Maybe it's a signal of a paradigm shift, or maybe it is truly a unicorn and an outlier. Either way, though, it's potentially a fulcrum point, or it's this insane, like, just thing that happened kind of miraculously. But either way, Indiana's story is unique at this point. Maybe it's, and yeah, maybe it becomes the first of many who build through the portal and build through, you know, getting experienced players and then all that. But look, I mean, a lot of teams have had experienced players. I mean, friggin' BYU has 25-year-olds every year. They're not winning natties. Indiana combined all of that with, I would say, key acquisitions, great evaluation, and then having a coach who is an absolute monster and a killer. Play it again, Sam.
He was given an offer he couldn't refuse. He knows the score. He gets the women. And he kills the bad guys. Cignetti. Cignetti kills.
I mean, it's the drops are amazing. thanks to Doug. He pointed out, I think he actually emailed us and said, on the POC, you guys mentioned these Cignetti drops being national memes a few times. Is that true or just a joke? If they've gone viral, I'd like to know so I'd have street cred. So that's Doug. So Doug is the one that sent us these. I haven't seen them anywhere else, but they should be. Like,
they should be.
If they're not, I don't know.
God has mercy.
Cignetti.
Don't.
Yeah.
I mean, we legitimately...
Cignetti kills.
If we weren't such lazy pieces of crap, we would have created Cignetti the Killer shirts at some point.
Yeah. We could still do that.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, we got some super chats to jump into. Matthew, twice. 2 years with the POC, two natties for the conference. Another great year. Love you guys.
Thank you, Matthew. You're one of our very, very favorite new Big Ten listeners.
And then...
Also, Dave, can you tell your basketball coach to stop whining, LOL? I'd love to. But, you know, he's got to complain. And look, is it a legitimate complaint? I don't mean to like digress into basketball scheduling in the Big Ten. Is it a legitimate complaint? Sure. Is the time to complain about it right after you just knocked off the number four team in the country on your home floor and fans rush the court? No. No, it isn't. That's like Tuesday press conference fodder. Like, that's not post-game fodder. Like, we can all listen to like a good-tempered like, oh yeah, great on the Big Ten for giving us X, Y, and Z. It's like, okay, that's kind of fun and funny at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday. After you just beat Purdue, that cannot be like the thing you digress into. Anyway,
right. Yeah. Continuing. Well, we can't talk hoops on this glorious day.
Not on a day where Indiana is forefront. Football school Indiana, all right? Football school and forever a football school Indiana.
Oh, look in the chat. Did someone say killer?
That's right, baby.
Hashtag Cignetti Zodiac. I just finished season one. I'm a few years behind of Dexter.
Oh.
Dexter. I loved Mindhunter. I watched it back then.
Yeah.
But they canceled it, which kind of sucked. I like doing did. That. But I like Dexter was pretty cool. It was the first season.
Yeah, it falls off like literally like you're driving off a cliff at some point.
Really?
But it's pretty good up till I want to say season three or four maybe.
Okay, I'll watch another.
The John Lithgow season is good, and then everything after that is absolute dog shit trash.
Okay, well, Destiny I thought would like that. Watching that was pretty good. So it's I'm sure he's seen that and dabbled in that a little bit. Pretty amazing story. And when you look at the game itself, we knew Miami would be very good on both fronts. This was the only time since I think week one that Indiana allowed a 100-yard rusher in Miami, and I forget the back's name, but he had like 20 yards at half. And then
Fletcher.
And he broke off that 57-yard run. And their offensive line is really good. The defensive line for Miami was dominating.
Insane.
Dominating up front. And this was the worst. It might have been the first 100-yard rusher all season. But it was the worst QBR for Mendoza, the Heisman Trophy winner, since that opening weekend of Old Dominion where I watched the game and I'm like, yeah, they're not going to be that good this year, which was completely wrong. But
Miami was hitting the shit out of him basically the entire game. They got a couple of what should have been roughing the passer calls that they didn't get.
That was rough.
There was one where, like,
they left a lot of
well flags. After the ball was gone, he was, I think he was like pseudo blocking, but like he was giving himself up, and the Miami player rocked him right in the chin, which low key is a spot where you can get a concussion if you get hit right there and it, you know, slams you back hard enough. Yeah. I immediately split his lip, like he was bleeding on his lower lip. That should have been called. That one was probably the most egregious one, but there were several hits on him. They were clearly like coming in with the mentality of there no easy rides. We're going to hit you every single time we can. And their entire defensive line was just feasting the entire game. And it wasn't just the edge rush. Like the edge rush has been elite all year, but like defensive tackles just blowing by Pat Coogan up the middle. Like Mendoza had no time. Anything he had to do downfield, he was having to create with his legs first to be able to throw it. And it was just, I mean, what stood out to me, honestly, Ryan, was watching that game. Miami was obviously and clearly the more talented team. And clearly. And when you watched, like, especially in the second half when Indiana got tired, because I think you saw Indiana's lack of, like, elite depth, because they've got good players, but there's not a lot behind them. You know, it's not a program that's been built on high school recruiting and development for very long. It's literally a two-year-old program. So you had, in the second half, guys were getting tired, and, like, things were happening, like, Tony just splitting the safeties and running past them. Like, and it's just like, oh, they look like they're stuck in mud. And yeah, you know, he's very fast, but also they're not as fast as him. Like, they're not ever going to be as fast as him, not even when they're fully charged and ready.
Most humans won't be. Yes.
But there was just a lot of that where it was like, oh, Miami's got really, really, really good players, and you would expect them to with Mario Cristobal as their head coach. Like, he's a dominant, dominant recruiter. He's been a very good evaluator. But Indiana, I mean, they won this through coaching, through discipline, through all those things that we've been talking about this entire run. You know, when there were critical mistakes made in this game, especially in the second half, it was Miami making them. You know, big personal foul, big face mask at this moment, at that moment. Like, these things were happening constantly. And then at critical moments, it was Kurt Cignetti making the huge testicle decisions to go for it on a couple of fourth downs. And that final one, Mendoza, you know, making the decision at the line to scramble instead of throw it, faced with kind of a complicated defensive look where it was zone on one side, man on the other.
Yeah.
He elects to scramble, has to beat like three guys on his way into the end zone. But the decision to go for that, it was, I mean, it was a masterclass for him. And I don't think Mario Cristobal coached a bad game, but you know, this is one where the obvious advantage on the Indiana sideline was huge.
No, for sure. And you mentioned that, and I tweeted this out too. I didn't see it and really point it out. Cignetti called three timeouts in the second half. Two of them, the fourth downs, they end up being conversions. They were both going to be, it looked like they were going to kick, calls timeout later in the clock, you know, in the play clock, goes for it, you know, keeps the drive going. The one that you mentioned where he ends up, you know, Mendoza ends up running it in for the touchdown, and then calls timeout defensively when Miami's driving and it looks like, oh, this could be a real problem. And they get the interception on the very next play. So Cignetti just, obviously, everything he did was right. Like, to call three timeouts, and two of them were, like, not late in the fourth quarter. You know, he had the lead. All of them were, like, massive plays. So that's great coaching to me. Like, you call three timeouts, you get two fourth down conversions. One of them's a touchdown, and the other one's an interception to end the game. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you would call your timeouts better than that.
Well, and I want to say the earliest timeout was one right before a huge third down conversion, was it not?
I thought it was the fourth.
They drew an offsides on the play right after it.
Oh, yeah.
After the timeout. Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, I was sitting there and I'm like, he's making mistakes on these timeouts. Like, you don't use a timeout here. This is bad clock management, because what if you end up going down? And it's just like, oh, I guess if you're going to, you have the wherewithal and the capacity to call a perfect play or call like the exact right thing coming out of a timeout, then maybe the expected value of a timeout in that situation overvalues the ability to stop a clock at the end of the game. I still don't think it does, but I mean, if you're that, I don't know. He has everything. So, I mean, he knows the score. Like, he's got, he kind of has this all laid out in his mind. And it's just, I don't know. I'm really impressed by the guy. It's otherworldly what he's been able to do there. They've got 2 losses in 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take this as a whole, and doing it with Curtis Rourke last year, doing it with Fernando Mendoza, and people talk about like, oh, he's a 2-star recruit. And obviously he's not. Like, obviously he's a better player than that. But like, he's Fernando Mendoza. Like, getting talked about as like a NFL first rounder or whatever. I've watched a lot of Fernando Mendoza in my time. Watched a lot of Dante Moore, too. Neither of those guys are going to be dominant in the NFL. Like, neither of those guys should be first picks in the NFL draft. Like, it's just, some of this is just coaching and, you know, offensive scheme and who they have around them. But I don't know. I really kind of fell in love with this Indiana team. Not just, obviously, Cignetti's great, but, you know, their running backs, Kalen Black, Roman Hemby, running just
Black
runs so hard.
He hit the hole so hard.
Like, it's got to hurt to tackle him. It's got to hurt so bad to tackle him. Yeah. And it's just, it's so much fun to watch them play. And their receivers, I mean, Elijah Surratt had kind of some rare contested drops game.
Yeah.
But Charlie Becker coming out there and just those back shoulder throws where it's just like, oh, automatic play on fourth down. You've just got that. You've got auto catch on.
Yeah.
Omar Cooper getting a big catch early. Like, it was, this is a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, all credit to Miami, because I think they played a heck of a game too. Carson Beck, obviously, I think he thought pre-snap, I'm throwing that ball there no matter what. He's got to either place that in a perfect spot right at the pylon, and that's the only place he can throw it, or he's got to check off and go to the other side of the field because there's, it wasn't open, and they didn't even have a flat route on that side to pull the flat defender down. So the flat defender's just up there, okay, I guess I'm just going to sink back to this route because there's literally no one for me to cover down here, and then picks off the ball. Yeah, I mean, it really, really fun game, really fun fourth quarter. You know, Indiana had to hang on for dear life at the end of this game because Miami made some adjustments, and they were coming hard in that second half.
Indiana made a couple of mistakes, too. When you got 2nd and 1, you could ice the game, and to get a false start, your best offensive lineman, like, that's not Cignetti-like.
No, you know? That was not. That was nerve-wracking. And then, you know, I mean, the blocked punt for a touchdown looms extremely large.
It was huge. The momentum was going towards Miami, and then Indiana could do it. One of the craziest stats, that we had this in the chat, Dylan in Albuquerque, what was it? Only 1 fumble all year or 0 fumbles? That's crazy. So the tweet came, I think it was from ESPN. He said, Indiana did not lose a fumble over its final 1,047 offensive plays in 15 games, only losing a fumble in the first quarter of its season opener. No other team since 2004 has gone more than 12-plus consecutive games in a season without losing a fumble. It hasn't happened. And Indiana did not lose didn't lose a fumble over 15 games. All the playoff games, the Big Ten championship game, on the road at Oregon, on the road at Penn State, like, not a single fumble. Like, that's insane.
Crazy. It's crazy. It's because Kalen Black's arms are, like, this big.
We got some comments in here. Let me look up what's going on. Everyone seems pretty – I mean, for the Big Ten, it's a big deal, right? 3 in a row. Obviously, I agree. I think it's one of the greatest sports stories out there. It's hard to compare professional sports and college because, like, in the NFL, like, if the Saints end up winning the Super Bowl in a year or two, it's like, that's, you know, that can happen. In college, like, it doesn't happen. You don't have the have-nots rising up and wiping the floor with everybody else. Like, it just doesn't – I don't know if there's an equivalent, like if European soccer, where you get a team that was relegated moves up to the Premier League and then, like, wins it all or something. Like, I don't know how else you could describe it, but it'd have to be something like that.
Yeah, and, like, I think I want to – people, I think, are retrofitting a NIL narrative on this whole thing. And first, entering last year, it wasn't like Indiana was a rich program. Like, they weren't – like, Curtis Rourke was a bargain quarterback that they could get because he was coming off of an injured season. They picked up a bunch of JMU transfers, and it was a bunch of G5 guys on that team. And then they kicked everyone's ass and went 11-2. This year, yeah, there's a couple pieces that were more expensive, but again, this was not one of the most high-priced NIL rosters. Next year might be. Like, next year they're going to have a lot of investment, and it's going to be a much more talented team probably. But this year also was not like – this was not a hugely expensive roster. Like, Fernando Mendoza, I'm sure he got some money. I don't think it was the top of the market. And I don't see anyone else on that roster who was probably getting paid top of market.
It's about spending wisely.
It's about evaluating. Like, the thing is, you want enough money, and this is a lesson for all programs, including UCLA. You want enough money that you're competitive. Like, you want enough money that you're not going to get blown out by, you know, X, Y, or Z program because they can outspend you at every single slot. You got to make your decisions about where to spend this amount of money versus that amount of money and that kind of thing. But that's what everyone has to do. But you want it so that you're leveling the playing field. And then it comes down to, again, your skill, you know, your evaluation ability, your development ability, your relationship building ability. Because there's also been situations where if it's $100,000 different between this and this, guys maybe won't take the highest offer and instead go with the one where, you know, they've built an old recruiting relationship or whatever that goes on in these sorts of situations these days. You want the money to make it so that all that stuff matters again. You don't want it to be that you're just getting smoked because you don't have enough money. And there's a lot of examples of programs, basketball and football, who have a lot of money and are not very good at the evaluating and end up struggling more than they should.
Yeah.
Washington in basketball this year is a great example of that. They've got more money than God. They spent a lot of money on that roster and they're dog shit. So it comes down to evaluating. Indiana obviously evaluated beautifully, and they were doing it at JMU. D'Angelo Pons was arguably the best player on the field for either team yesterday.
Like a 5'9 corner.
You know? From JMU. that's not luck. That's skill. That's evaluation skill and development skill. And that, yes, it's a credit to the player because he's very good, but it's a credit to this staff for noticing him and saying, no, that guy can play. Not only can he play at JMU where we're recruiting him, he can play at Indiana. He can play at the highest level. He can play and start and dominate in a national title game. That's evaluation. That's what it is.
Yeah. All right. What do you think this means for college football in general? With Indiana winning, the Big Ten winning, certainly a power shift. I watched some clips from, there's a lot of old takes exposed. Paul Feinbaum, even like not that long ago, saying that Cignetti is a fraud and all this shit. It was just like, oh man. But for the SEC to not even be in the championship game the last three seasons. I think Colin Cowherd had like an interesting sort of take on this. So pre-NIL, yeah, if you got a bunch of car dealers, car dealerships in your back pocket, that's fine. Now you need car makers to be backing your program, not car dealerships. And
it's no longer a bag. It's no longer a bag of cash full of $30,000. It's million-dollar deals for guys. Yeah. And so I think there's two things going on. I think that's a good point. Which is, yes, the SEC has a lot of bagmen, but do they have oil money? Do they have tech money? Do they have billionaire money, first? And then second, and this is, I think, the more interesting point, and this I'm going to liken to UCLA basketball from the 1960s and 70s. I'm going to liken it to USC football from the 1970s. Has there been a sense of entitlement that has grown at these programs where, you know, oh, well, they should want to come to Georgia and Alabama and so on and so forth because we're the best. You know, they're going to get the best of everything here. But how long does that stay true in a world where they can get the best at and a school like Indiana knows, hey, we're a few million dollars away from competing for a national championship. We're not years of program investment. We are 1 year of program investment away from competing because we can go get whatever players we want. In that paradigm, in that new world, yeah, there's some cachet in being Alabama and there's some cachet in being Georgia, and particularly with your proximity to a lot of high school recruits. But, you know, that can't play forever. And unless you're willing to invest at the same level as, or at least a similar level as Ohio State, Oregon, maybe now Indiana. But I think what we've seen is that the Big Ten, the schools generally, are investing in NIL and investing in extra resources more than the SEC. And yeah, there are some schools that are doing it big, but I think more of these schools, they've got a sense of entitlement. They've got the sense that like, oh, well, we don't need to do that as heavily because we've always been this way.
Yes, there's a lot of that. They've always been this way, and it's a different way now.
Yeah.
I mean, spending money is important, but you have to do it the right way. Like, the Dodgers and the Yankees spend a lot of money. The Dodgers are way better with evaluations, and they're just smarter about it, and they're winning.
Well, I do think, you know, we don't want to overcorrect, because the thing is, Georgia was still probably the second most talented team in college football this year, and easily could have been in the Natty as well. And so you don't want to overcorrect that way, but I do think it has leveled what was a very, I mean, if you look at the history of the SEC in basically the post-2000 era, it's been dominance, absolute dominance from the SEC. Like, the Big Ten titles prior to Michigan 2 years ago were, I mean, what was it? Ohio State in 2014, and that was it? It's been dominance from the SEC. But, you know, 3 years is a trend. And it's three different programs, and I would say the last two, I don't know if Indiana clearly outspent a lot of the SEC. I think they will starting next year, but Ohio State clearly outspent the SEC on their roster, clearly outspent on their coaching staff, and I think it now becomes a thing where will the SEC try to match? Will these schools get serious in that way? Because if the SEC decides to get serious, and I know that's kind of a ridiculous way of phrasing it, because obviously they're very serious about football. But if they get serious in their program investment at the NIL, you know, and suddenly Georgia's a, you know, what are Ohio State and Oregon purported to be? $40 million payrolls?
I think
something
so,
like that.
Yeah.
So that's for, okay, I guess for all the people who think there's an actual salary cap in the sport, you know, put your hands over your ears for a second. But a lot of schools, I mean, every school is paying extra. Well, I won't say every school. There are some that are led by idiots at the leadership levels who believe that there's a salary cap. But for the most part, schools are raising money beyond the 15 or so million that you can spend from your rev share on football. And so for Ohio State and Oregon, that's purported to be 20 to 25 million more. I would say the average for a lot of programs is like, it's not a huge amount. I would say it's like in the 10-ish range, 10 to 15 range, where schools are paying between 25 and 30 generally on their payrolls. So it's not a sea change, but I do get the sense that the SEC schools are more in like the low 30s, like the, and not at the tip top of the sport. And, you know, maybe they can get the investment to do that, but it's definitely been a flattening of, I think, the playing field at the top level.
Yeah, I think Texas is going all in again. We're seeing Oregon retain a lot. They're investing, of course. Ohio State is going to be there. There's a lot of this going on. You know, can Indiana keep this going is the question. And they, you know, they did have an average age like 23 or 24 or whatever. Like, that's pretty nuts. But there's going to be better players coming in, but it's going to be a different thing every year. I think it's hard to do what Indiana did, and I'm not saying they can't do it again. I think they can do it again. I don't think it's something you can do that every single year.
You don't think you can go 16-0 every single year?
I don't think so.
Wow, weird.
Yeah. Who was it? Sark said that no one's
ever going to do that again. Yeah. Literally the next season somebody does it.
So you can't – I don't like when people – like, old takes exposed and all that stuff is funny. people want to make like these, like when Indiana was up 10-0, if someone, I'm sure people were tweeted like, it's over, they're going to win 15-0 or whatever. And all I said was, one team was tackling better than the other. Indiana was tackling better than Miami. But Miami showed a lot of grit, a lot of guts. I didn't think there was any pianos falling on Cristobal's head. I thought they did a really good job. They played Indiana as tough as anybody in the playoffs, for sure. They played way better. It's a hard thing to do, and Miami's going to come back. They're going to reinvest. It's an interesting thing. What this showed is, like, just because you spent the most money doesn't mean anything. You really have to do this in a smart way. And every time Cignetti talks about it, it's the people, having the right people in place. How long can he keep that whole staff together? How long can you, keep bringing in? I think he can bring in guys. It's a proven concept now. He's going to have backing. If they do want to spend a lot of money on somebody, Mark Cuban can write a check. Like, they're good there. Once you've proven the concept, like, you're going to get, there's no donor fatigue right now. If you spent a whole bunch of money 2 years in a row and you haven't won anything, donor fatigue could be real. You're not going to get that in
Indiana. Yeah, I mean, like, how much money do you think Indiana's going to raise over the next month? It's going to be absolutely insane.
They do whatever they want. I mean, they outnumbered Miami in Hard Rock Stadium.
And this is the thing where, like, it is a paradigm shift in that, like, Indiana, I mean, until they no longer want to be, are now a big boy in college football. Like, and they can be because it's a money game. Like, that's what it is. And so, yeah, they hit on a ton of evaluations and they did this perfect thing, but that doesn't need to be their model forever.
True.
Like, the thing is now, I mean, look at what they're doing right now in the transfer portal. Like, and not even just the transfer portal. Look at what they're doing in high school recruiting. Like, they're recruiting. There's a guy from St. John Bosco who's a highly rated recruit who's probably going to Indiana. Their transfer portal situation right now, they've gotten the TCU quarterback. They got the Wisconsin offensive lineman, Joe Brunner. They're going out and getting guys that other people really, really want. They're getting A.J. Harris from Penn State, Toby Usunsami, the edge from, I think, Kansas State, Josh Hoover from TCU, Nick Marsh from Michigan State.
Yeah.
Like, they're able to reload in a way that, like, yeah, they've got the cachet and the zeitgeist, but they also got the cash, or they're getting it now. And so now they can be a talented team on top of, being the best coached, most disciplined, all that kind of stuff. And so can they sustain? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't require, like, I would say the degree of difficulty of what Cignetti accomplished these first 2 years is the most difficult job he's had and it's going to have at Indiana. Now it becomes easier because the money is flowing now. You can build the program the way other people build their program, and you combine it with being a killer head coach.
Yeah.
Indiana, I think, for all intents and purposes, is here to stay as long as they want to stay.
Yeah. I mean, there is a certain sense of magic this season, too, like not losing a fumble.
They went 11-2 last year.
I know.
Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's some magic, but if this was a 13-2 Indiana team, would we say it's not magical? Like, Indiana. It's Indiana.
Yeah.
Do you remember the last time they had won double-digit games? Do you remember?
It's like,
it was never before last year. Like, this is what he's done is insane. What he
literally the losingest program in the history of the universe, like, when he took over.
If they lose that 20-15 game to Michigan instead of winning it, or if they lose that road game at Penn State instead of winning it, it doesn't really change what's gone on there.
Yeah.
It's still absolutely categorically insane. And I don't think it would change really the trajectory either. Like, I think the energy, like, Indiana, they keep talking about the huge fan base. But UCLA's got a huge alumni base, okay? UCLA isn't selling out Hard Rock Stadium in Miami for the friggin' Natty game, right? No. Against Miami. Like, that's not happening. Indiana did. That fan base is completely energized for this thing. They've been starving for an elite team to follow. When was Indiana basketball last good? Like, not even just, like, passable, but good. It's been a long, long time. Starving for it. Like, it's just this confluence of factors where, like, yeah, that alumni base, like, they might give millions in the next month.
Yeah.
To sustain this sucker. Like, they might decide, hey, Mark Cuban and a few other big guys, we're going to have an endowment for NIL. Like, they're going to do crazy shit now. Like, I don't know. I think Indiana's here to stay.
The last two undefeated regular season teams, or full, you know, teams to go national champions in basketball and football, both Indiana. Here's my big concern, David. Look, if you're watching on YouTube, look at this. Okay. We know this guy, right?
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
And if you're just listening on the podcast, we love that too. I'm showing you a photo of Kirk Cignetti smiling.
We don't like that. No smiles.
Okay, look. You can't smile if you're a killer. I know you just won the national championship and all that, but there's no smiling.
You got to be pissed off.
Yeah.
You got to be pissed off about something.
He did have some beers. I love that he's a Yinzer, too. He's like a Western Pennsylvania
totally
guy.
Yinzer.
Oh, my God. He sounds, just listening to him sounds like my childhood, which is hilarious. I don't know, something about that Western Pennsylvania, all the football stuff that's come out of there, but just impressive. Just an impressive performance. I love that we were sort of on the Cignetti bandwagon early and nowhere near thinking that this would happen, but pretty impressive what Indiana did.
Dude has lost 11 games in 7 years.
That's amazing.
That is pure Saban shit.
I love it. So JP in the chat, Indiana, the great cycling 1979 movie Breaking Away. Oh, sorry. Let me put that up on the screen. Yeah, Breaking Away, the Cutters. You remember that? Like the townies, like the guy. That was a great movie.
No, despite my looks, I'm not 64.
Well, 1979, you could have watched that.
It was 6 years before I was born?
It was a really great movie, yeah. Wait, weren't you born right around the time that UCLA won the Rose Bowl last? Is that true?
Look, you don't need to keep bringing up painful memories.
I had to bring that up, yeah. All right, I think we got to take a quick break. We'll come back and do a few questions. But yeah, we just wanted to kind of give you our thoughts on the game. Obviously, super impressive what Killer Cignetti did. But let's get back in a minute, everybody. All righty, we're back here on the podcast of champions. We got to do some questions quickly, if that's possible. David, you want me to start with?
Yes, please.
John Abrea, 2026? Question mark. Dear Dave and Ryan, this is the time of year when I can get concerned about the future of the POC and whether you both will keep it going. I wonder how many more Minnesota, Purdue, Nebraska, Northwestern, Iowa, Illinois, Rutgers, Michigan State games Dave can watch. Indiana would have been included in that last year. No, you don't. I worry when I hear Ryan begin a podcast from his sister's basement saying, okay, let's get this over with. Thank goodness for MyBookie, although I've not seen a post on X from either of you stating MyBookie has been officially re-signed for 2026. Will the POC be back in 2026? Do you need more Trader Joe's gift cards? Always yes. Or how about I send you some old my old jockey underwear? For Griffin's sake, step to the effing podium and make a statement that you intend to return, or at the very least, that you are right where you need to be. My mental health depends on the POC and never more than during the offseason. Please, your ability to care so little effort yet still produce a mediocre podcast gives hope to all of us, John and Brea. Is it like the end of the James Bond show where you like, James Bond will return?
Yeah.
Are we returning?
I don't know. Are we?
I don't know, John. I want to tell you good things.
So it's I'll take you behind the scenes. It's a constant conversation for us. Longtime listeners know that our joy has diminished with the move to the Big Ten. I think, you know, that's a fair way of appraising it.
I think it's helped that Big Ten has been winning.
Yes. Yes. I honestly, like, the playoffs has, I would say, slightly rejuvenated me, not having to deal with the slog of the regular season. I don't know, like, and also I'll put my cards on the table. UCLA making a hire with a pulse may also rejuvenate me. Like, it's honesty time. The last two college football seasons have not been college football has always been a source of immense joy for me. I love it. I look forward to it every year. The last two seasons, I have not. It has not been, like, I wasn't looking forward to it. It's been a slog to get through. Have not enjoyed the games. I've not really enjoyed a whole lot of it. Just, that's the reality for me. But I am looking forward to it again. Now, this is a very, like, you know, maybe it's just because I'm a UCLA-centric guy and, you know, that's what it is. And, you know, but whatever. But this is a rising tide that can lift all boats for me. Now, for you, I don't know. I can't speak for you.
Yeah. In the chat, El Gordo Flacco, what can the POC viewership do to keep David and Ryan interested in the Big 18? Changes could be happening. I think there's a lot of stuff going on. So we might have to step away for a little bit.
Maybe.
And then sort of regroup.
Maybe.
And see.
Maybe.
If there's some big newsy stuff happening. But it might be good to just recharge the batteries.
We may recharge.
And then come through it. But I think I would lean towards there's still going to be a show.
I would lean towards that as well.
Yeah.
I think, so if you'd asked either of us in, let's call it mid-November, the answer would have been no. And in fact, fuck you. Here we are now in mid-January. I won't say the battery is fully recharged, but it's like it's getting up there. Like it's getting a little bit. But yeah, I think we're gonna reset a little bit this offseason. We won't be doing, I don't think we'll be going weekly. At least for a little while, but we'll be cranking along again, probably heading into the season.
But thanks for your concern, John. And I mean, Trader Joe's gift cards fix a lot.
So, they fix so much.
He sends me stuff all the time, so he's done way too much. But thank you, John.
That was beautiful. All right, this is from David in Orlando. New GOAT Sports TV show. Ryan and Dave, it's time to kick off the long offseason and get back to what this podcast is best at, talking about anything but college football. This is so true. We have kind of lost that thread because we did take a hiatus last offseason. Like, we probably need to do a couple of just devoted offseason shows.
Right. Okay.
In the months between the semifinals and the championship game, I finished watching the breakout sports romance, Heated Rivalry. While relatively little time is spent focused on the arguably even more dangerous to play than football sport of hockey, plenty of screen time is given to the titular rival players and their bare backsides. I'd love to hear an in-depth review of the moving emotional moments of this show and perhaps which Big Ten coaches are most like Shane, Ilya, Scott, and Kip. Keep up the great work. David, I would have to watch this show to have any idea what you're talking about, but maybe I will. I've heard lots of interesting things about this, so maybe I have to watch it.
I've heard things about it. But I haven't watched it. I know Saturday Night Live did a spoof on it, like a Harry Potter spoof about, it was like gay hockey players, right?
Is that what it is?
Yeah. It's like Brokeback Mountain hockey players or something. So, yeah, I don't know.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Next up, what are you doing?
Let's see. Oh, we got, let's see. Oh, our buddy, West Texas Mike. So he wrote last week about some of the things he wanted you to complain about. He says, good to know that Professor Woods has dismissed class, canceled finals, and is now handing out arms while fortifying his bunker.
So, West Texas Mike, I felt bad about my answer last week because I did just kind of hand wave the whole thing. It's because your question was so broad about all of these different things that are very bad and awful going on in the world that I actually couldn't do any single one of them justice. So, here's what I'll say. Look, you know, off-season gets weird on this show. If you want to, you know, send in a couple of discreet questions about specific types of things, I'd be happy to, babble for a longer time.
Yeah. I like that.
This is a video from POC.
Yeah, so I can't download the video, but it's like the Taken speech. So I think this is what he's talking about. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you're looking for ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you, and I will kill you. So I think that's what the video is.
That's Signetti.
That's
what he was saying.
Does it sound like Signetti?
No. All right. He's not an Irishman. This is from POC Professor, Surviving Signetti. Kurt Signetti has already conquered college football. Now the man who kills blue bloods for sport is turning his bloodlust to you two for the offseason. How would you try to survive the killer Signetti until Indiana's next kickoff? I think it's sort of like, I think we talked about this once upon a time, a zombie apocalypse. I would probably just keel over and die. And I think it's the same thing with Signetti. I think I would just keel over and die.
Ah, okay.
Were you just smiling to the camera to set up our screenshot?
No, when you were talking about the zombie apocalypse, I was like, well, yeah. I got all excited.
Yeah. We talked about that, like, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think I claimed then I would roll over and die. I would roll over and die if Kurt Signetti was coming after me. Here's the funny bit.
Yeah.
He's just kind of a doughy old Midwestern dude. Like, you could probably kick his ass.
He's a Yinzer. He's not a Midwesterner, but yeah.
Whatever.
Western Pennsylvania, different. I think I would, like, try to take him, like, channel cat fishing and, like, you know, have an Iron City beer with him or something.
He's coming to kill you.
But I would try to, like...
Try to charm him?
Yeah, I would try to charm him.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Like, as a fellow...
Yinzer,
yeah.
Yeah. You don't have a Yinzer, though. You don't have the accent.
No, we lived there till I was like 11, and then we moved to Massachusetts, and then I felt like I was moving to another country because...
That's two really harsh accents to grow up around.
Yeah. So then I sort of like, I think it mellowed, chilled out the accent, and then I've been here for a long time, but yes, it was very, very different. I think that's the last one we got, right?
Yeah, that's it. We hit this in the right time frame.
I had one star. El Gordo Flacco. He said, what's Ryan's reward for winning the season? Bragging rights for the picks? Yeah, I think that's
this is the first time you've won, right?
No. You've won one time of like 10 years. So the one time, and then the time you won.
But
and
I kicked the shit out of you that year, didn't I?
I think you did. I think yeah. That one year you kicked the shit out of me. And then... The next year, you're like, I'm not talking about like you know. Like,
we're not talking about the distant past.
Yeah. So it was funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was like 3 or 4 years ago or something. But a lot of them have been close. This was probably our worst collective year where I think we're 500.
We were pretty bad last year, both of us too. You won again, but I think we were both pretty bad.
Okay. Was this the one? But I thought
going to the Big Ten has been horrible for our picks. I don't mean to like. Blow smoke up our own asses. At the end of the Pac-12, we were both clipping at like north of 55%.
Yeah, we were crushing.
This is, I don't know. I'm never going to have a feel for Rutgers football, and I don't care.
It's, some of the stuff is tough. It's harder, too, with a bigger league. Like, we had a good feel for the 12 teams, not just the history, but turnover. And it was a different sport then, too, where every team isn't completely different every year. Like, Maryland, how much do you know about Maryland? Like, well, they're going to look completely different again next year. And I think it's definitely tougher. But we still do it, and it's fun.
It is.
And I won again, so that's great. But that's cool. But we do care. Like, for people that we talk about it, we actually care. Like, if Dave's winning, he'll text me. Like, if there's a missed field goal or something that he got the cover, like... He won't text me if I answer. I'm like, hey, I need help. He won't respond. But if it's like, oh, Maryland missed a field goal at the end of the game, and now Dave's going to come, he's going to win, I will get a text about that. So it does matter to us, like, each and every week, like, who's winning and all that stuff.
No, so it matters to us until I am losing substantially, and then I'm above it all.
Then this doesn't matter. Yeah. But during the week, yes, I could call and be like, I was just in a car accident. I won't, I need help. No, I won't hear. But when Rutgers gets that 2-point conversion and he gets the cover, I will hear about that.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. We should do something. Are you going to do that? Hope you enjoy the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.